Ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Welcome.
Yes.
Welcome back to the podcast that will never die. Hurricanes be
the
damned.
The podcast will never die.
The Midgar Minute podcast. Welcome back. I am Chris, joined as always by my lovely and faithful co-host, Nick. Nick, how you doing after this incredible journey that we've been on for the last couple of weeks?
Well, it's been quite a whirlwind. No pun intended.
Hey, too soon.
It's just been funny, but honestly, I feel like we've been teased, right? Because I got my power back within a few days of the storm, but it was only just a couple days ago the Wi-Fi actually came back. So it was like I had everything, you know? It's like when you have everything, but you're just missing the one key ingredient. It's like a sandwich without the meat. But anyway, we're here now, fully stocked, no more issues, yeah. And we're talking about the FF7 novels.
Oh,
bro.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about
and,
that.
And I guess just to, you know, in case for anyone who hasn't listened to the previous episode where we kind of, Nick kind of gave a little rundown. And if you're not a member of the Discord, you know, Nick was affected by, we had a hurricane. Well, he had a hurricane. I got some rain for a couple days. but Nick was in the heart of a hurricane a couple weeks back. A Hurricane Ian, right? I think it was called.
Hurricane Ian, baby. Fifth largest storm in our country's history.
Nice. So, yeah, we've been dealing with that, and that's why we've been sort of radio silent for the most part the last couple weeks. And, you know, the last episode went up a little bit later than usual, but we're hoping now that things have sort of smoothed out a little bit that we will be back on a regular-ish schedule moving forward. So, but with that out of the way, and before we dive into this wonderful episode we have planned for you today, we would just like to give some thanks, some extra special thanks to our lovely, lovely friends over at the Mosey Gang who have been, you know, supporting us, damn, since the pretty much the beginning and have been really good sports and patient about all this nonsense that we've been dealing with here. And those people I would like to name. And those people are Scott, Kyle, AJ, Danny, Kevin, Jillian, Brianne, Matt, Sam, Charlotte, Cameron, Garrett, Dan M, Ryan, Petros, Matt M, Thios48, Colton, Tone, Kimmy, and this lovely, brave soul, this poor soul. We have a new name for this list, a Mr. Chris G.
Chris.
Who is the newest Mosey Gang member. Thank you so much, Chris. Please get in contact with us either on our Instagram or send us an email if you want to get access to the Discord. And if you, dear listener, would love to be included on this name of this list of names and want to give us as little as one gil a month, you can do that. We have links for that in the episode description. And you know, you get access to our Discord. We try to do a monthly meetup, and we're still trying to iron out when the best date is because we have people all over the world. We're Mr. Worldwide's over here. So as we try to iron that out, but you know, we also just kind of talk about random stuff, you know, FF7 related stuff and kind of everything else in between. And if that sounds good to you, we, like I said, we have links in our episode description and in our Instagram as well. And yeah, I guess with that out of the way, thank you again, Chris G, for being one of the unluckiest supporters, I guess, because he did that, and that was right before all this stuff happened. And this would be only the second episode since all this stuff has happened, technically, really the first.
And one of the ones that came out, was recorded like a week before he became a member. So he's waited a long time. So we're gonna give him double the shout out.
Give him extra love.
Double the shout out. There we go.
So we love you. We love you guys, everyone, Chris, everybody.
Listen, anyone out there, whether you're driving in your car or you're at the office or maybe you're laying around your home.
Doing laundry.
You got a drink in front of you, take a drink for Chris G. You got water, you got a beer, don't matter. You take a drink for Chris G right now. That's what we're doing.
The realest
you
of
waited G's. Waited a month for that.
But yes, with that out of the way, I am excited today to talk about our topic, which is something that we have brought up, I believe, it was a couple episodes ago, I think. We sort of, when we were doing the theory roundup a couple episodes back, I believe we had sort of at least brought up this concept of Lifestream Black and Lifestream White, which is not a subscription service or a Final Fantasy Pokemon game that is coming out.
Nor is it $8 a
month. No, it's definitely not. But it is something, it is certain, what would you call them, passages from the novel On the Way to a Smile, which is, I'm trying to wrap my head around exactly, because I think you were the one who had brought it up during that theory episode, and said that it was sort of reminding you of Kingdom Hearts sort of stuff. Am I just making that up?
No. I mean, yes, you are making part of that up. That's why I'm a little conflicted there. Anyway, no, not necessarily. I wouldn't say it's anything necessarily like Kingdom Hearts, but... So let me just say, I think it's worth noting. So this book originally came out in 2009. So we're talking about a post-Advent Children world. In fact, post the whole compilation. But it's worth noting that conventionally these passages can be interpreted as what happens between OG and Advent Children. And a lot of it takes place in the live stream. So where a lot of theory heads like myself and Chris are going nuts is wondering, are exchanges and events like this happening between OG and Remake? Just like, again, this novel will show us conventionally what's OG to Advent Children. And again, I just think what's getting a lot of people excited is maybe this explains what the likes of Aerith and Sephiroth had to travel through in order to get to where they are now. So with that said, what appears to be going on with the Lifestream White and Lifestream Black, and again, I'm going into some of this blind, like a lot of this I've read about and heard other people talk about, but there are portions of these passages that I'm going in blind for here, but my general understanding, as brought up in previous episodes, is like, this might offer an explanation as to what's going on with Zack and all the anomalies taking place in this new time loop, new timeline, new lap around Midgar, whatever you want to call it. This may or may not, we'll see as we read through it, because that's our plan here today, Chris, we're
doing
read
a radio
these
play
excerpts
today, everyone.
Like, legit, we're gonna read it out. We're gonna go one excerpt at a time, and then sort of break it down and react to it from there. But it could offer an explanation to a lot of the distortions taking place, a lot of the things that are happening with Sephiroth and Aerith, because it appears as though Lifestream Black is gonna be from Sephiroth's point of view, while Lifestream White is from Aerith's, and where that takes us, we don't know, but I have every reason to believe it may give some insight into their journey in between the OG and Remake, how they got from one spot
to
the other.
How,
I don't
how
know.
They have
again,
these,
some of this I'm blind for.
This seemingly like extra knowledge that they're not divulging to anyone else, you know, and they just have. And as we have talked about a number of times on this podcast, that Sephiroth and Aerith are these two entities in Remake that they seem, well, I mean, Sephiroth is more overtly like doing shit that like we don't understand, like he's doing all this crazy stuff, and
but they're both more clued in than
right,
the rest.
And
they're both more clued in.
Aerith,
than the rest.
Aerith has been a bit more sly about it, where I mean, it was more towards the end of the game where we were sort of being like, okay, like there were some little hints here and there that like maybe something is up, but we weren't quite sure. And then it was more that the affinity scene towards the end of Remake before you go to Shinra Tower, and that whole scene of her in her childhood like room and all the stuff she's talking about there, and kind of her whole entire demeanor really ever since when you link back up with her in Shinra Tower, and everything that happens sort of in the last like the climax of the game where, you know, when you run into Sephiroth at the end of the highway and she's talking in this manner of like this guy needs to go. Like, this guy is he's representative. He's not just a man. He represents something much larger. And of course she has to be very cryptic about it.
and like, not only that, that there's something like just downright wrong about him.
He should not exist, you know, that in he's this world.
He's like something to the liking of that. But a fun thing to point out is what we're going to be reading to you are the final chapters of the On the Way to a Smile book. Like, this is how, this is how they close this book out. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just eager. I kind of want to just jump right into it, because I think it just gets juicy right from the start, man. And you want to do live stream black? I'll do live stream white.
Yeah. So basically, what we're gonna do is, you know, we'll alternate. You know, we'll read a section. You know, I'm gonna read the first live stream black segment, and then we'll discuss it, and then we'll figure it out as we go, as is, you know, our MO with this podcast. We just wing it most of the time.
Guy, if you're new here, guys, we are always winging it. That's our thing.
Always be winging.
We're just winging it. always be winging, bro.
But with that said, yes, so this is the first live stream black segment, and I'm going to try and do it in my sweetest, most dulcetest tone. but here we go. The man could sense the live stream trying to erode his spirit, the memories of his former experiences, thoughts, and emotions. If he allowed himself to be taken into the current, the being he once was would soon disseminate and disappear amongst the spirit energy cycling around the planet. The man thought this unacceptable. The planet to be his rule and to become part of that system would be nothing short of defeat. The man sensed a large flux in the live stream, a sign of another, different defeat. When the live stream erupted onto the surface of the planet, the man thought that Cloud was no doubt certain of his victory. Cloud was the one who had twice sent the man into the live stream. The man knew that if one could hold on to some core of their spirit, then one could remain a separate entity, independent from the planet's system. Cloud decided that core, and he wanted to let Cloud know of that. I'm still thinking of you, and I'll show you the proof of that as well. That's very interesting.
So first things first, I think this further solidifies that Sephiroth is a complete egomaniac narcissist. And when you actually start to look at it through that lens, so much of the way he thinks and the things he wants to do make perfect sense. And when you consider that, like, he was like this born prodigy, you know, born like he's the strongest like weapon and warrior who's ever lived. He's this war hero where people see him as like this savior who saved them from the Wutai invasion. And then when you have Hojo, who's in of himself. A narcissist, you start to see he's obsessed with Cloud, literally, because Cloud's the only one who's ever like gotten the best of him
twice.
And maybe that's really just it.
Yeah, and it's like that's why he's so fixated on him.
Does it really need to be more than
like,
that?
Yeah, it's like,
because he's like this.
The fact that they say, you know, it's like he thinks that like this is the worst defeat that he's ever faced in his entire life, that like this is
like Cloud like, broke
how
the illusion.
Dare he
Cloud
do that?
Broke the illusion that he's like a god. That's really and Cloud was the one to shatter that illusion. So if he can shatter Cloud, it almost gives him the
that
leverage
is the
all over
that would
again.
Be his sort of revenge, right? Because honestly, yes. It's one of those things where I always sort of thought like, oh, Sephiroth just is like, oh, Cloud, you're impeding my success, and I want to get rid of you, but. Now that I'm taking into consideration how they've worded it here and kind of what we see throughout Remake is like, maybe he is like, he's fascinated by Cloud because he's the only person that has given him any sort of struggle at all, seemingly ever in his entire life.
Yeah. He toys with Genesis in Crisis Core. Like, that fight, as awesome as it is, Sephiroth's got a smirk and he's sitting on his heels the whole time.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, you want to be a hero?
And they, okay. They dish rag Angeal.
Yeah, Angeal is just there. He's kind of literally just caught in between the two of them. But yeah, I definitely get the sense that Sephiroth is very, I was going to say enamored, and I guess kind of. With Cloud, just because he's probably just fascinated by him, because he's probably like, what makes you so special? What makes you the only being to ever make me lose my shit twice now? Where I even chuckled a little bit when I was reading. It's like Cloud was the only person that chuck him into the live stream twice. And it's like, yeah, I mean,
yeah, legit, he's probably like, yo, this isn't an accident. He's probably like, what's going on here?
It's one of those things where maybe the first time in Nibelheim you could maybe argue that it was a fluke, because I mean, Sephiroth isn't going to, like, at that point Cloud is just a regular Shinra trooper. Like, he's not, there's no reason to suspect that he has any ability to, you know, take on Sephiroth, let alone any sort of soldier at all, you know? So, like, you could definitely argue, like, oh, Cloud bested him in Nibelheim because Sephiroth was, you know, underestimating him and being like, oh, you're some country bumpkin, who cares? But...
Yeah, he's like, oh, you're some grunt.
Yeah, and then, you know, when Cloud attains victory over him again, even though, you know, maybe we'll get into it maybe more from... You know, we see the other perspective here from the white side, that, you know, it was, I mean, Cloud was sort of the conduit, but I do still feel like Aerith is more the actual thing that defeated him in the end. But I don't know.
But it was Cloud's Omni Slash that sort of punctuated the defeat.
Yeah, he is the one who landed like the final blow for sure.
Aerith just kind of thwarted the overall plan, but, like, Cloud defeated him in, like, the hand-to-hand combat, per se.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Maybe I'm getting a little bit more tied up in the grander aspect of it all, but I'm very interested to see now, because, again, like, we're, you know, I had read this a little bit of, like I kind of just skimmed through most of these, just to get, like, a general idea. But this is kind of our first, you know, us reading this is...
Like, dive on
this
it.
This is a blind reaction to these segments from this book. And
but
I am...
I was just going to say, in that first paragraph, dude, like, also, him, like, quote-unquote dying and him, like, sort of disseminating into the live stream and him just going, like, no, I don't accept that. That is defeat. I am independent from it. It's like, there's that narcissism, you know, all over again.
Me?
But losing? Equally, I feel like he also put on part. He puts up part of the lore here, right? Like, where is it? One second. The man knew that if one could hold on to some core of their spirit, then one could remain a separate entity from the life stream, independent from the planet system.
So that, to me, in and of itself, is the explanation of, like, how Sephiroth is doing all this shit in Remake. And, like, that question of, like, is this really Sephiroth? Or is it Genova? Is it some amalgamation of the two? I think this is a guaranteed response to that question of, like, this is Sephiroth. He has somehow separated his self, I guess, or his spiritual core, whatever you want to call it, and he has now, you know, he's transcended outside of the planet's influence, and now that has enabled him to do all this stuff that we're seeing in Remake and we'll see in Rebirth and so on. Which I guess, yeah, when I was reading it, I'm like, that feels really
big. Oh my
god,
dude, it kind of makes sense.
But it does answer a lot of questions.
Actually, I don't want to jump to a conclusion.
I mean, I'm not saying it's definitive.
It would make sense that... No, I have a different thing. But it's like, it would make sense... that maybe that's why he's fixating on Cloud, because that's what makes him feel like an independent, makes him feel like an individual, right? Maybe, like, the way the life stream you could disseminate into the live stream. Maybe he also knows that one could also disseminate into Genova, but they have to hold on to that independent spirit. And for Sephiroth, he knows it's his entanglement with Cloud that keeps him that that independent spirit.
Mm.
So maybe he's at this point where he's like, well, if I don't have that, I'll just disseminate either into the planet or either into Genova. It makes sense, dude, that maybe that's the truth. Or, maybe what we have here is you have Sephiroth who's in the driver's seat and he's driving this car like that if he doesn't drive it in a certain direction, he won't be the driver anymore.
Right. And I feel like because it kind of also just made me think about, you know, the other questions that we've been asking of like, why is Sephiroth seeming to like toy with Cloud throughout Remake? I mean, he does it in OG as well, but in Remake, they're really...
He could kill Cloud at any moment. He could kill Cloud at any moment, especially in the beginning.
And so maybe he is making it so... Because at the end of the day, Cloud is the one that was responsible for his defeat. So, I mean, he can kill Cloud whenever he wants, but if he still has that connection to his spiritual core, killing him is not going to do anything, theoretically, right? So maybe if he loosens his grip on his spiritual core by fucking with him mentally, I mean, this is all conjecture. I have no idea. This is just like I'm pulling this out of my ass right now. But maybe that is an answer to that question as well of like, oh, maybe if you're mentally compromised, maybe you don't have that connect. I mean, I think even if that is the angle that they're going towards with this, I still think it's not going to work because, I mean, come on, Cloud's the protagonist. He's going to, I mean, it'd be really interesting if he does sort of, I mean, because he does kind of lose himself, you know, in OG after he talks about the Nibelheim
OG,
and all that stuff.
Dude, in OG, he jumps on top of Aerith and starts beating the shit out of her.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, he loses himself.
You know? Yeah, you know, when he's getting pushed around in a wheelchair, maybe that's, you know, maybe Sephiroth is like, okay, maybe, you know, if he wants to get Cloud out of the picture, or, I mean, because it's still one of those things, my mind always goes back to that scene, the 7 seconds till the end scene, and I'm still not sure if Sephiroth wants to eliminate Cloud, or he wants to assimilate him, for lack of a better term, not like turn him to his side.
Nah, he wants Cloud in the picture in some way.
Because that's like, why he says, like, really the, kill him. Like,
nor will I have you end. You know, like,
because it definitely.
I almost wonder if what Sephiroth wants, right? Mm. Like, is if he wants to dance with Cloud forever. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
If he wants to
eliminate just, everybody else,
that's
but
what'll
Cloud.
Keep him around. That's what'll keep him alive, dude. Like, is that sort of the idea? Is that even when Cloud kills Sephiroth in OG, in Advent Children, it's Cloud's trauma that summons him back, mm-hmm. and in that way, Sephiroth is never truly dead.
I'll never be just
so
a memory.
Yes, I think he's just trying to push even further because he's like, okay, in Advent Children, Cloud kind of got over it. It's like, all right, how do I hurt you so bad you don't get over it next time?
Right, and that's maybe, you know, the stuff we'll see that in Rebirth, maybe. Because, again, it does drive my mind's eyes attention to that line in the trailer of, like, what is Sephiroth's true motive? Like, or, you know, whatever they say. Like, what's Sephiroth's plan? Like, what is he actually after? And with this, like, I mean, we still don't really get an answer to it, but maybe when we keep reading, we'll get a little closer to something. But it definitely, it's starting, I feel like even with this short little passage, it's starting to make a little bit more of a shape, right? Like, it's starting to take form
and
a little bit.
Imagine how we feel when we get to 3.
Oh, God. I don't even want to think about it.
All right. Are you ready for?
Yes.
Are we ready for White or any?
Let's get into it.
All right, here we go. Livestream White 1. Here we go. The woman was an ancient, which explained how she was able to maintain her individuality even within the livestream. If she so wished, she could become part of the planet at any time, but the woman thought it too early for that just yet. The woman had sensed a different presence within the live stream, cycling around the planet. It was the vehemence of a strong will, one that would never join with the planet. She knew this consciousness. It was the man who had taken her life. A merciless spirit hidden behind a
beauteous
wall. That spirit was now operating from within the life stream. The woman sensed that he was planning to exert his influence to the surface of the planet. She wondered what she could do. Because it would be dangerous for her to come in contact with him, the woman tried to keep away from the man's consciousness. Because of this, she couldn't learn much of the man's plot. However, just once, when the man's spirit had suddenly appeared near her, she discovered that he had made his memories of Cloud the core of his being. Cloud was her friend, her beloved, a symbol of what was important to her, and someone to be protected.
We got a Mamoru Cloud. So that's very interesting. I mean, that would explain why... Kind of we were talking about that scene in at the end of the highway where it's like she doesn't really know what he's doing or what his plan is, but she's like, this guy is bad fucking news. Like, he has to go. And that, honestly, that segment right there is kind of, I feel like, echoing even what we were just saying of like, this dude is like, something is not right about him. And it's like, even if remake Aerith knows Sephiroth from like these past memories of like, oh, you know, this is the guy that kills her, you know, that, you know, obviously she would not have any positive feelings about him, but knowing that his consciousness is still existing, and we still technically don't know yet like how much Aerith really knows, like, because I still think that this Aerith in remake is not, she's not like this, whatever this, the point of view of the, you know, because I'm assuming from these passages, we're getting the point of view of the characters from OG, right? After they have obviously been in the live stream and now they've transcended into whatever.
Well, I mean, after one paragraph each, what I'm sensing is that Livestream Black is the Sephiroth. That is Sephiroth, OG Sephiroth remanifested. Mm-hmm. What I'm getting from Livestream White is that this very well is OG Aerith, and I wonder if OG Aerith is interfacing with remake Aerith in the live stream
right
through the whispers. We'll see a little bit more of that perhaps as we move forward. But what's interesting to me is that like the live stream is sort of like something that's open to navigation, right? It seems like she's navigating through it and could sense Sephiroth somewhere within the live stream. But kept herself away from
it. Right. And
secondly...
No, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, no. You go ahead first.
Okay. I was just going to say, secondly, this part right here, the woman sensed that he was planning to exert his influence to the surface of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where, again, the symbiosis with Sephiroth and Genova come. Because that's what Genova is doing through and through. Is infecting the planet on its surface as a virus. When you get that geostigma... Those aesthetics don't resemble Sephiroth, right? When you look at everyone who had the geostigma, like, I don't know. When you look at...
Yeah.
What's the best way for me to put this? It almost seems as though, again, like, Sephiroth and Genova's... Their motives may not be the same, but their ends are.
Right.
Right?
Right. And honestly...
Their means and motives may be different, but their ends, they both... At the end of the day, they want the same thing.
I'm sort of leaning in still like there's that they're like synchronized in a certain way, right? Like they're...
And I like the image of Sephiroth in the driver's seat with Genova as just like a backseat driver, like driving Miss Daisy,
yeah.
But just like it's a psychotic
like, yeah,
episode.
Yeah, man, do your thing. Yeah, I'm just along for the ride, you know? We have the same end goal in mind, right? Right?
Yeah, exactly.
But what I was going to say before, you know, because we're talking about, you know, you had said that OG Aerith is in the live stream sort of communicating in, you know, probably not a direct sense with remake Aerith, but in some way, and, you know, through the whispers and things like that. And it was something that was interesting to me because I'm like, wait, she never was really afraid of the whispers. And I'm like, no, the very when we are first introduced to the whispers, she's afraid of them. Right. And she's like, oh, what's going on? Help me. You know, that whole thing. But as the game goes on and when she interacts with them again and again, even that scene in her bedroom in Shinra Tower, she's literally, you know, I don't remember exactly what she said, but, you know, she's like, oh, like they're not our enemy. Like these things are not, you know, like I feel like there is that she has that connection with OG Aerith, but it's not a one-to-one thing where the OG Aerith is now inhabiting Remake Aerith, but I think...
Yeah, it's not like she's closing her eyes and Remake Aerith appears before her and says, this is going to happen.
Right, and because...
No, it's like there are these sort of like these subtextual...
Right, and I think that like the her being an ancient has, you know, that sort of... She has that sort of... you know, that like you said, like that subtext, that sort of thing where like she, you know, maybe not knows, doesn't know every exact thing, but she can obviously communicate with the live stream and, you know, probably picks up pieces and, you know, not for nothing, Aerith is, you know, a pretty bright girl. So, you know, I feel like she can probably pick up a lot of stuff. And who knows if she is connected to the live stream, what's to say that she's not connected with all the other ancients that died, you know, and every other living being that ever died and is now in the live stream. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, she's basically getting like fragments from the live stream and maybe through her own experiences and, you know, who, you know, I don't know how much her mom had told her when she was alive, you know, and all these other things, or even how much her mom knew. But, you know, it stands to reason, for me at least, that she, you know, at this, especially at the point at the end of Remake where we were even saying earlier that she sort of makes that personality shift a little bit where she starts acting like she now has like, oh, she knows what her purpose is now. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, she maybe had little hints of it going through the story, but I feel like that towards the end of the game is when she really started being a bit more confident and being like, okay, I feel like I know what I have to do now, right? Whatever it encompasses, like I have to protect Cloud. And she even says in the affinity scene is like, you can't fall in love with me, because I think that's her way of trying to protect Cloud from the potential future of
the pain of,
yeah,
loss
of her when she dies. So it's like, you can't get attached to me because I'm going to die. Like, man, this is opening up so many different things and is now like, I kind of want to go through Remake again to with like one, like, and we will, I feel like we will do a Remake Revisited episode at some point. Probably, I mean, I've been holding off for as long as possible, but I feel like every time we do episodes like this, I'm like, man, I really want to go back and play through the game again, just to,
once we're in that rebirth hype,
recontextualize a lot of this stuff. And, you know, even in the course of us doing the, you know, the coverage of the game when it first came out, you know, there's a lot of stuff then that, you know, I'm sure that if I went back and looked at it, and just be like, oh, now, because there's been so much stuff that has happened since then, story-wise and theory-wise and stuff like that, that, like, through all this, like, I feel like we could go back and look at it at a new lens, and, like, this in particular is definitely making me want to do that even more so now than I did before, which it was already pretty strong before, but, yeah, holy shit. This is...
Holy shit, indeed. You ready? I don't know about you, dude, but are you ready for round 2?
I am ready. I think I'm ready.
Oh, boy. I peaked a little bit. We're in for it.
We're getting in there, folks. okay, so Livestream Black 2. Here we go. When the livestream erupted onto the surface of the planet, the man had already surrendered his inconsequential memories to the planet. Memories from when he was a boy, of his few friends, of the battles when he was still unaware, of his life in bygone days, all these became a part of the inundation encased around Meteor, and finally receded. At the same time, the core of his spirit, and those memories deeply related to it, moved from torrent to torrent and traveled around the land from city to city, when the people who were trying to escape, or those left unable to do anything but stand still, were enveloped by those streams. He decided to leave them with his stigma. If Cloud noticed that stigma, the man was certain that he would never disappear. As long as Cloud remembers me, I can continue to exist within the life stream and on the surface. Even if my spirit disseminates, even if just one fragment of a memory courses around the planet, in the end, I can count on Cloud's consciousness to bring me back, the man thought.
So again, like this.
All right.
What is that about? Okay, so what is it about Cloud's consciousness? Well, what does Sephiroth know
here? Here's the thing, is because what that makes me think of is that concept of, right, like you die like three deaths or something like that, or two deaths, is like, you know, you die, when you die your physical body dies, and then you die a second time when, like, the last time anyone ever speaks your name or something like that. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. And the last time somebody thinks of,
right,
you.
So what I'm gleaning from this is that just because, like, Sephiroth doesn't, like, he even says here that he's casting away all these memories of, you know, all this, the unimportant shit in his life, basically. And Cloud is the one thing that he can stick to. And there's, like, out of all the people that are still around, like, who is going to remember Sephiroth the most and have the most reason to remember him? Even if it's not a positive remembrance. You know what I mean? Like, Zack's dead. Mm-hmm. All of Sephiroth's friends are dead. You know, there's no one else that had any sort of, you know, even...
Yo, it's true. When you think about it, Sephiroth never really, like, you know, a little bit of it in Crisis Core, but he never really had a family. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't really know what bonds are.
Yeah, so,
are.
Like, everything from his past basically is gone, but then there's Cloud. That is the one thing that is literally anchoring him to this realm of existence, you know? Which is interesting, and I think it's one of those things where, like, it's just because Cloud is, he was there, and he has that connection with him, and that's it. You know, it's not, I don't think there's anything special about
Honestly,
Cloud.
Honestly, it's really, I gotta tell you, it's really, reading this right now, it's really actually starting to feel like a sequel to me now.
Yes, oh,
it's really starting to feel that way
now.
1,000%. Because now I'm like, wait a minute. Because it's like, okay, and this is how you know some real nasty shit is going to happen in Rebirth. Because what I'm reading here is, okay, OG was just the battle. It wasn't the war. Mm-hmm. However, we're winning the war. It looks like Sephiroth
for
has
now
shaved himself down. Like he even admits here in this excerpt you just read, his memories.
All the
gone,
unnecessary.
Like, you know, of his friends.
Yeah. He stripped himself of all.
Shaved him down.
Yeah. Exactly.
His existence has one thing left to cling to. And it's like, but again, like, that just tells me Rebirth is going to be that much more tragic.
Right. And I mean, even the end, like, segment there of, like, as long as Cloud remembers me, I can continue to exist within the live stream and on the surface. So, I mean, of course, Sephiroth, I mean, if that's the way he thinks about it, I don't know if this is something where it's like this is just their interpretation of, you know, if, like, this is what Sephiroth thinks, you know, is like, oh, as long as Cloud remembers me, then I can continue to exist. And ties back into Advent Children also, where it's like, you know, the whole I'll never not just be a memory, that whole thing, where it's like, oh, okay, well, that brings new meaning to that as well. In my eyes.
So here's my question. I'm going to be, again, this is my job, I'm going to be the annoying fourth wall guy. Is there, like, this acknowledgement from Sephiroth that Cloud is just the main character?
I mean...
And that the world of Final Fantasy VII begins and ends with him?
I mean...
I mean,
I mean It's
maybe Sephiroth's so based, like he's just gotten to such
he's
a
so
point.
So red
he's
pilled.
Like, oh.
He's just like, oh, well, if I just if I you know in, if
if Cloud and I have a reason to fight,
he's the,
I can just
he's
keep
the main protagonist. I'm the main antagonist. So that's as long as we can keep that connection, as long as we can keep that relationship, I'll be smooth sailing this entire time.
I can keep coming back. Exactly. I don't know.
I mean, I think we'll see. I think maybe that I mean, from like an outside, like, you know, like you said, like a fourth wall perspective. Like, yeah, I guess from like a storytelling perspective, probably a little bit of that. But within like in universe, I still think that it is just like, you know, Cloud is the last person who was alive that has that level of a connection with him. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, he's a fucking lonely narcissist egomaniac.
Yeah, and it's like literally there's no other person.
He's a test tube baby. He's a combination of so many. He's a fucking mess.
Yeah, he is a
fucking
mental
mess,
to say the least. God bless him. but yeah, no, I think that, you know, I mean, I'm sure there are people that'll be like, oh, it's a much deeper connection. Like, no, I think it literally is just because Cloud is the only person left alive that has, because you remember
that plus Cloud is the only person to ever like defeat him twice.
Right. Yeah. Like that by itself, I think is
that'll
enough
fuck him up.
For him to want to,
he's born thinking he's this perfect being.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's like, I don't think, you know, I'm sure people can extrapolate it into their fanfics of like, oh yes, they have such huge boners for each other, and that's that's the reason why. But no, I think it's, yeah, they have that connection of, you know, Cloud. Remember, Cloud used to think Sephiroth was a hero. He wanted to be him, you know. So even that, going all the way back to that, I feel like is something like they have like this weird connection with each other that is like, you know, obviously there's all the bad shit that Sephiroth did to him, but there's something where, you know,
it's funny, like, now if you're Genova, right, and you're kind of in the back seat,
like,
and you're like, wait,
perfect,
yeah, and you're like, wait, Sephiroth, you mean that guy over there, he wanted to be you? Yeah, oh, he'll be so easy to manipulate.
Yeah.
Come on. That's like, that's,
and then
guy.
Sephiroth goes, right, oh, there. But I did like kill his mom and his entire hometown in front of him, and she's like, yeah, that was maybe, you kind of fucked up a little bit. That was a bit of an L per se. That is definitely an L plus ratio for you, Sephiroth, for sure. but yeah, no, I think that, you know, that connection that they have, and it's interesting now because I never really thought about it in terms of that, right? Like the connection that they have. I honestly, kind of what we were just saying about the whole fourth wall thing of like, oh, he's the bad guy and Cloud's the hero. That's kind of what that was my viewpoint on them for the longest time. Is like, they're like that. It is, you know, Cloud is, you know, the symbol of good, and Sephiroth is the symbol of evil. And just like any old, you know, Greek tragedy, they're just going to go at it. And, you know, that's just, that's story, you know, it's a fictional story that is following along those sort of lines, right?
The only other thing I was going to add is that, especially this era of Final Fantasy, you see something like this in 7, 8, and 9. Mm-hmm. There seems to be this awareness of Shakespearean root. Mm-hmm. This idea that the stories of Final Fantasy 7, 8, and 9 are a play taking place on a stage. The stage being our television sets, the backgrounds and platforms that the artists build, etc., etc. This is expressed in Final Fantasy IX with the game opening up with a bunch of bandits putting on a play as a way to kidnap the princess. You see this exemplified in Final Fantasy VIII when Squall and Rinoa get caught in that waltz on stage, and they kind of have to perform on stage in that way. And in FF7, this is what Loveless is all about. This is why Genesis is obsessed with Loveless and thinks it has like the truth hidden inside of it, because the truth is, it is a play just taking place, and everyone has a role to play. And maybe in this world, the hyper-conscious state of being that like Sephiroth is on is like, I have this role, and I'm going to fit into this role.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to love it.
And this role is in conjunction with Cloud. And the more I amplify this role with Cloud, the more alive I can be. So, you know, there's always kind of been a fourth wall acknowledgement from the Final Fantasy brand that it really is just a play on a stage taking place. Hence Loveless in Epic
right.
7. I guess that
and that is a good way. I think that is a really great way to tie that in, because we've joked about Genesis and Loveless and all that stuff, and I kept, you know, thinking about, like, what does that actually mean? Does that have any actually greater meaning to the overall plot? And I think you kind of touched on something there. And I also realized in this entire discussion, you know, we're talking about, you know, Sephiroth's connection to Cloud and all this stuff. We overlooked something very, very easy and simple to signify their connection. Cloud has Genova cells in him.
Yeah.
And that in itself might be just amplifying that connection.
The stigma. That's what he means. Mm-hmm. That's what he means.
And that's what, and so, and from that passage as well, I'm thinking that Sephiroth created that stigma so that Cloud will not forget him. Because after you defeat Sephiroth, you'll be like, oh yeah, whatever, we beat him and I can move on. But then the stigma came, and then Cloud knew that that was something related to Sephiroth, so he kept thinking about Sephiroth. God damn it.
Yeah, it was just right there. It was just in his bloodstream. And dude, when you...
God damn it.
It's funny. It took a second for this to click. But this, when the people who were trying to escape or those left unable to do anything but stand still, he's talking about all the people in the test tubes who got hit with Genova cells. The reunion!
Mm-hmm.
Unable to do anything but stand still, enveloped by those streams. He decided to leave them with his stigma. Same thing, yep. Like he's talking about the clones. He's talking about the...
Yeah, and I also think that he's talking about the clones, and I do...
And if Cloud noticed that stigma, and then every time Cloud bumps into them, he thinks of Sephiroth.
Mm-hmm. Thus, I mean, and if they all have that stigma, which was left by Sephiroth, yep, and that... That guy are sick indeed.
It all plugs right in. It all plugs right in, dude.
Oh boy, that's I. You know what? After that, after that first passage, I'm like, I mean, I feel like we're gonna stumble on stuff, and there's a lot of things that are gonna start lining up, and maybe in ways that we had not considered before this.
This is getting kind of crazy.
It's getting a little heady.
It's getting
a little heady, to be honest.
All right, what do you say we do Livestream White 2?
Let's do it.
Let's go, baby. So here we go. The woman discovered that there was a growing number of spirits within the life stream who refused to be absorbed by it. Oh God, this is already, that one sentence already has me spiraling. Anyway, while they were different from the man's spirit, they rejected the life stream due to the same emotion.
Hatred.
Their feelings towards the planet were steeped in hatred, just like that man's. This is the result of his influence reaching the surface, she thought. The woman drew closer to the souls that had just entered the life stream. Spirits filled with hate and tried to heal them. Beneath the surface of enmity were hidden memories. Memories from their lives as normal people. While unremarkable, they had joyous memories as well. She released... How judgmental. Although unremarkable.
Damn,
like, I'm just imagining like a... I'm just like imagining a father like in the garden with
playing
his kids
catch
on
with his
shoulder.
Son. Like, how
he's
unremarkable.
Like, and she's like, oh, they didn't even slay fate? How unremarkable. Yeah. Anyway... While unremarkable, they had many joyous memories as well. She released those thoughts and dissolved them into the life stream. Well, how nice. Having lost the core of their emotions, the surface animosity disappeared. The woman had found a solution. However, more and more spirits steeped in spite appeared, and it was too much for her to bear. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the life stream hospital is overrun. She rushed through the life stream in search of other souls to help her. Ancients on the verge of diffusing. These fragments of consciousness accepted her undertaking. When she found fragments of consciousness of people she had once known, pitifully few in number, she infused them with her own memories and sought their assistance. Whoa! Okay, I'm going to reread that. When she found fragments of consciousness of people she had once known, pitifully few in number, she infused them with her own memories and sought their assistance. She had more spirits on her side now. But even so, the hatred borne by that man did not decrease. She then thought of Cloud, living in his reality up on the surface. In order to reduce the hatred lingering in the life stream, she would have to remove the hatred flooding the real world. The woman wondered if Cloud could help her. However, that might lead to Cloud getting hurt as well. The Cloud she knew had a very fragile heart. So basically, here we have what appears to be OG Aerith. She's swimming through the live stream, and she sees, oh, look at all these souls that are trapped in here. They're trapped in here because they're steeped in hatred. But I'm Aerith, and I can save them. So she's able to save them. But then it starts to get overrun, and there's too much hatred. She can't keep up with it anymore. So she needs a new MO. So they're very, very ambiguous here about her gathering the spirits of people she once knew.
So I'm interpreting that as, like, you know how we see Zach at the end of Advent Children, you know, standing in the doorway?
Yeah.
I mean, because you got to think about it, like, because these are, I'm assuming, just dead people, right? So she's using the, you know, the memories or the essences of all these people that are in the live stream that she knew. And Zach would be one of them.
Dude! I'm sorry to interrupt, but what if the Biggs that's alive is the Biggs that she knew because he hung out at the orphanage? And that's why he's back in the orphanage. Because, like, that's the
Biggs
that she
knew. Wait a second. Okay, hold. Wait. Hold on a second. Okay, all right, so, because I didn't really think about that until, like, you just said that now. So are you telling me that she is now basically taking these people that she knows now through Remake, basically, and people...
She's literally... Yeah.
And now she is basically saying, hey, eliminate... Because, yeah, it even says she wants to eliminate the anger or whatever, the hatred on the surface.
The hatred, the so despair, the despair. That's, I feel like it's the despair. That's what
she is sending
at.
Those people back, basically, through whatever. Because we, this is just, okay, so this is a sequel. Remake is a sequel. 1,000% now. There's no denying it after reading this.
It's a sequel.
So she is basically sending these people who have died in OG back, and who are supposed to die here as well, but she's sending them back to help Cloud get rid of the despair and the hatred on the living plane of existence.
I remember what she said.
Holy.
Pitifully few.
That's why Zach
remember,
is back,
right?
Dude. That's why Zach.
Yeah, dude, 100%. 100%.
Oh,
100%.
My God. Oh, my fucking God, dude.
This is compatible. I'm not going to say
it's not.
That we,
we're not. This isn't the. We don't know if this is 100% fact, but I mean, come on. It's pretty goddamn close. It's in the ballpark,
yeah,
at least.
It's looking pretty good. But listen, she said pitifully few in number, right? So she knew Zach. Biggs, she never knew in OG. But when they add that, when they add to Biggs that he basically helps out at the orphanage that Aerith helps out at, that you could see that the two of them may have bumped into each other at
also,
some point.
Also, you know, we were talking about just in the last passage that this Aerith that's in the live stream is communicating with Remake Aerith, right? What I'm assuming that's not a one-way connection. Maybe she is connecting to all these other, and who knows, maybe, I mean, if these, you know, if Biggs, you know, is in the live stream and she's now part of that live stream, like she knows who he is after, like in death, right? I would assume there's so many leaps of logic that are going to happen here. but you know, just to try and like suss all this stuff out. If she knows that he, you know, he could be somebody that could help. And that to me will solidify that the Avalanche crew is definitely not dead. Like, we don't see Jesse.
Or that they are dead, but they won't be dead until this problem is solved. Like, remember when I keep saying, like, I feel like the way this series ends is Advent Children. Like, it's the ending of Advent Children is the way this trilogy ends. imagine the way Advent Children ended with like Aerith and Zach going back like into the live stream, but now you see everybody there. With them. Yeah, everyone who died, like
they, yeah, everyone yeah. does. You know, they look over the shoulder and give a thumbs up as they yeah, as they fade away they into little glowy. Maybe yeah. No, I think honestly because I mean we know that Biggs is alive. We didn't see Jesse die. Like 100%, and it's implied that she is alive, and I still think that Wedge is alive because we don't see him die either. They are both implied to be dead, but now that we know that Biggs is alive for sure, like we've seen him conscious and awake in this world, that to me is almost a guarantee that the others are still around somewhere somehow. And then that also opens up the door. I mean, well, at this point, not many people have died. But, I mean, poor Sonon. who I don't even know where to begin with all the Sonon stuff. Because
he was better off
dying. He was probably better off dying. Because he's probably going to get it pretty bad. Because he's definitely not, I don't think he's going to the live stream. Based on how Integrate ends, I don't think he's going back to the live stream. He's probably going to be stuck in some sort of limbo or something. But anyways, that to me.
But is there a third? I'm trying to think. Is there a third? There's Zach Biggs, but who else do we know that Aerith knows? Because I feel like that's so deliberate for her to be like pitifully few in number.
I mean, well, she didn't have a lot of friends.
She didn't have a lot of friends who were dead.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if we're thinking of like OG, I don't really think. I mean, honestly, Zach by himself would be enough, I think, to, you know, help.
Well, remember, here's what's bothering me. And again, it could be a translation thing, but the pitifully few in number. That tells me there's gotta be three.
Oh, okay. You're taking few as like literal, like.
And again, this is we don't have to harp on this too much because it's a translate. Like what we're reading is a translation of the Japanese version. Mm-hmm. The English. Are we ready for chapter three?
I don't even know, man.
Dude, it looks like you got a chunky one.
I do have a chunky one, but that's okay. Oh boy. Okay, hold on. Let me take a sip of my water here.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Whew, okay. Livestream Black 3. Here we go. Despite mankind's troubles, life on the planet have returned to normal. The man became aware of the increase in spirits. They could be called the darkness of the heart. Oh, God. This is turning into Kingdom Hearts, isn't it? Melding with the livestream. He cherished that lingering darkness, even more so when he considered that the stigma he had left on the surface was what created it. He thought that he could possibly enjoy himself with that, filling the live stream with his darkness. Interesting. The man hid himself within the life on the planet and traveled around the world, branding even more people with his stigma. On the surface, there were many people who no longer had their normal lives. And at the man's temptation, the dark parts of their hearts grew even larger. Soon the man thought to himself, I want Cloud to know this is my doing. I want him to know it was me. I want the humans to know that this is my doing. For that, he needed a body. There were things he wanted to say in his own voice. Things that he wanted to shatter by his own hand. Oh, man. You're talking about a fucking egocentric narcissist here.
Dude, that's what I'm saying.
He had decided he would use his mother's power with a fragment of his mother's body. I too can get a body again, the man thought. And so firstly, he tried to manifest on the surface just as a spirit. But his attempt failed. He had already returned the memories of his own appearances to the planet. And so he was not able to produce an image of himself. Oh, okay. So he had gotten rid of all of those other memories, all those other parts that he willfully casted aside as if they were nothing. And that's ended up being his own undoing here. So the man found memories of a suitable appearance from the live stream, and with that form produced an image. It was the form of a boy. Soon the man remembered that being on the surface was incomparably more limited than the freedom of being a spirit. He created two more agents to do his work. These three were separate entities, and at the same time, he himself. These three, created by the strength of the man's will and detached from the system of the planet, were both at once a part of reality and monsters out of fantasy. The man thought of the future. As my servants are looking for mother, if they come across someone who knows me, then from that spirit I can learn of who I once was, and with mother's further assistance, I can become fully real. Even if there's something lacking, it doesn't matter. Cloud will make me complete. That will be the beginning, the man thought.
So is Rebirth going to expedite Advent Children?
So that, I mean, that was basically, this is like a prequel to Advent Children. It's spoken in a way that is, or written in a way that is making it seem past tense. So,
well, this is what's interesting to me, right? Because the first two is not a, how do I put it?
Like this is like something that, you know, I would expect to see like even at the end of Rebirth or over the course of Rebirth. We find this stuff out that this is, it's interesting that this is in a novel and not in the games. I mean, I'm sure it might be in the games as well. We just don't know yet. I mean, that last line is really kind of sticking it to me of like, that will be the beginning. And it's like the beginning of what? Of remake? And I mean, obviously, I mean, we knew that Kadaj, Yazoo, and Laws, I think, were their names. We knew that they were sort of, I mean, they made it pretty obvious in Advent Children because they just look like him in a lot of ways. And, you know, now that we know that they, well, we don't know, but it is severely implied that those were the bosses that were fighting at the end of the game before we fight Sephiroth. And it just occurred to me that that big giant whisper thing that we fight, is that this Sephiroth that we're reading about the perspective of right now? Because that can't, they, those representations came from that main body. So maybe this version of Sephiroth that has become, you know, that he's living on his own plane of whatever, is what we saw and what we fought before we fought him, like his, you know, physical quote unquote body, before like the final fight. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm now just piecing that together of like, oh, okay, so we already kind of seen this already. We've seen him in this, or a form of him in this whatever state that he's in. And I think that's what that is. I feel pretty confident in saying that. And him absorbing the whispers and stuff like that is all the, all of that stuff, which I was very confused about for a long time. It's starting to become a little bit clearer now of like, okay, so this is, I am like 99% sure that is what this is. And that sort of, you know, we weren't sure like, oh, like he's, you know, sort of writing, you know, we thought it was a timeline thing. And I mean, I think it could still be that. And I don't think it's a multiversal thing still. I don't think it is. But because we still don't understand, like, okay, like if this is it more, I think it might be just more of a reset, right? maybe. I mean, it's still, I mean, I don't know. It could still be a multiverse thing.
I've always been calling it like a second lap.
Right. Yeah. Like this is, but you know, if Sephiroth can do all this other shit, like, could he not just, cause he is operating outside of the planet's will. Right. So he can kind of, I mean, he can kind of do whatever he wants, but up to a point.
Well, wait a minute.
Cause he could do a lot in the spirit form. More than being just a person that, on the planet, you know?
This is what I'm trying to think, right? I'm trying to look at this in two ways. One, is this be... Like, I'm trying... Like, the way we're talking about it right now, where it's like... This is before... This is explaining Advent Children, mm-hmm. right? But, like, you were kind of alluding to, like, well, what if the big Harbinger was Sephiroth? And that summoning of the three of them was that boss fight in the final mm-hmm. chapter. Then maybe this whole idea of, because, okay, the basic plan he's laying out is that he birthed these three forms that contain his essence. And if those forms could clash with someone, yeah, and if those forms could clash with someone that have profound memories of him, then he could form a new body. Is that,
hold on.
Yeah, go for it.
Because remember, that whole entire sequence is playing through in my head right now. Remember, even before we step into the singularity, what does he do? That might have still been the whispers. Like when we see the memories of Zack in his final stand, and then Red 13 sees his future memories. And like I'm realizing now that memories are playing a very, very large role in a lot of this stuff, and I'm just thinking, hold on a second. So now, because he wants to grab onto these people, right? And like I think, okay, I'm trying to, my brain is going so fast right now, but. What I'm thinking, based on what we just read here, is he trying to do that with everyone else in the party as well? Is he trying to basically turn them? Because basically he wants everyone to sort of become a hateful spirit or whatever, right? And he knows that, you know, he could probably do that for Cloud, right? Because he has all this connection and all these things that he could use to manipulate him. But I wonder, but they were all seeing it though. I don't know. That's the part. And now I thought I was getting onto something big, but now I am not entirely sure.
No, it's all right. You went.
I had a brain blast and then it ended up being,
you walked your way around. But all I was going to get at. So he's talking about this ritual, right? The kind of thing, the thing he performed in Advent mm-hmm. Children, where he had these vessels. And these vessels clashed with Cloud, and it was that clash that allowed those vessels to transform into Sephiroth, right? It gave Sephiroth a body that he could operate mm-hmm. with on the quote-unquote surface. What if we just performed that ritual in the Singularity? We clashed with the three of them.
I think
that
the Singularity is definitely like something now that I'm looking at, and I'm like, we did something there. Like, Sephiroth brought everyone there for a reason, and not just to have a sick battle.
I think he took that ritual... Yeah.
Because he absorbs the whispers before we do like the big fight with one winged angel and all that stuff. But what's correct. To say that he wasn't already controlling them? Like by the time that, because when he opens up that portal to the singularity. What if that was the time when he is like, okay, well, I am, you know, because it.
Well, we talked about
this, because they're
in a previous episode,
they're whisper
right?
arbiters, right? The ones that we fight there, like they're called the whisper arbiters, and it you doesn't know, make a lot of sense for the whispers to stop us from killing Sephiroth, because that's what they want us to do.
But this is like when you say, but this is reminding me of a conversation we had a couple episodes ago. So remember how we were talking about Sephiroth's original plan in OG was he was going to crash meteor into the planet, put himself at the core of that crater, and basically as the planet's healing itself, he was going to be the one to absorb all that energy and essentially turn into a god. So he realized maybe that instead of doing that on the surface, do it in the life stream. Instead of doing it with the planet healing
and
itself,
because
you do it with fate. So instead of him absorbing the planet's power, he's absorbing fate instead
and
because he created that vacuum.
His fixation on Cloud and his desire to crush him, basically, and every like even in this passage of him being like, you know, he wants Cloud to know that he is the one behind it. So he is now sabotaging his own goal in a way by, I think that's what's happening. Cause like theoretically from the way that this is sounding, it's like he could have won like already. And like you were saying, it's like he could have killed Cloud at any point. He could win at any moment, but he's choosing
chapter
not
two.
To.
He could win in chapter two. If his goal was to just kill Cloud, he can win in chapter two.
Exactly. But no, he wants to make Cloud suffer. He wants to make it, the only reason he is doing any of this at all is because he wants to make Cloud suffer, or at least that's what it seems like to me, is that...
That's what it seems like
and
to
that,
me.
And that is something that is, I think, ultimately going to be his undoing for a third time, because, you know, I mean, I obviously think that our heroes will find a way to overcome him and defeat him again, but I think... In our journey to getting to that point, that is where, like you were saying before, like Rebirth might be a little fucking scary, because like that means that Sephiroth is
because we're winning the battle.
He is toying with his food basically, and is something where he is going to, because he seemingly now has this unbridled level of control. Maybe not on the physical planet, but even I mean, I don't know. Even still, I feel like he does, now that he has the power of the whispers, I don't know. Like, maybe he can influence things a bit more directly on the physical plane or whatever. You know, aside from just, you know, showing up as, you know, in these reunion guys. You know, the other failed Sephiroth experiments. Huh. Oh, God. My heart is racing. I don't think my brain has not moved this fast in a long time. I am all over the place right now. The implications of this is crazy. Crazy.
Nuts.
Nuts. And, man, Rebirth is going to be a scary fucking game. At this point, I'm like, oh, okay, like, Sephiroth is in this position of power. Like, he has almost complete control over everything. I mean, I think that, yeah, obviously, he's going to get his comeuppance at some point, but, or who knows, maybe not. Maybe they take this a whole different way, and maybe they make it, you know, really fucking sad and depressing, and the heroes lose.
Who knows?
But, who knows? Jesus Christ, dude. I had no expectations that I'm like, oh yeah, this is going to be like a fun little thing that, you know, maybe it'll give us some, you know, little inklings about, you know, where the story is going to go, or maybe give us, you know, a new perspective on things. I mean, it definitely did that for sure, but I wasn't.
Just wait till we get to live stream.
I was
three.
Not, I was not expecting my brain to be leaking out of my ears. But yeah, with that said, yeah, please let us put a cap on this.
This is our final passage. Here we go. The woman considered ways of telling Cloud of the crisis. As she thought, all the feelings she couldn't tell him about came back to her vividly. There were many things she wanted to tell Cloud. However, she did not know what she should tell him or how she should tell him. It had been a while since she had worried. In the end, the woman decided she would see Cloud first and then think about what to do. Eventually, the woman discovered that the man, spreading hatred around the world, was trying to manifest on the surface. She wondered how he was planning to do that. Summoning up all her courage, she approached the man's spirit. However, he spotted her and chased her off. but soon gave up chase. She knew the man was laughing at her. You can't do anything. However, she had caught what he was planning. He was apparently going to use separate entities to be his agents. The woman asked herself if she could do the same. However, she soon changed her mind. Even if it were possible, I want to meet Cloud the way he knows me.
Oh, boy.
Huh.
Oh, boy. Okay. So, again, that whole...
So, like, the first half of that is her really just having regret of not ever really telling Cloud everything she felt.
Right. And now her being like, oh, I wonder how I can do this. And, and that's why maybe she, you know, is not directly interfering the way that Sephiroth is, you know, going up to Aerith and putting his hand on her shoulder and doing all that stuff, which to me, when that line of, you know, the man knew, you know, what she was doing, but didn't do anything because he's like, ah, you're going to lose. So that absolutely is what's happening here. Like Sephiroth thinks that he is like in complete control, and it seems like he kind of is so far. Based on all the stuff that we know, it seems that he is 100% in control and is the reason why he is not doing these things, like not killing Aerith right away and not killing Cloud right away and not just immediately accomplishing his goal. God damn it, Sephiroth, your ego is going to kill you literally again for the third time. Holy shit, man. Wow.
I'm hung up on he's going to use separate entities to be his agent.
I mean,
so I'm still
obviously from, you know, Kadaj and Yazoo and Laz and the reunion guys and potentially Vice. Maybe?
I guess, maybe.
And maybe the other... Because is he a Sephiroth clone? Do they ever really talk about... Did they mention any of that? I don't know if they did in Dirge, honestly. And no, I never really did any research on Vice, really. And I'm wondering if that may be... Because I'm wondering... Because, you know, much against Maximilian Dude's wishes, Deep Ground is going to come back in Rebirth.
They already came
like,
back.
I mean, they're going to play more of a role in the events to come in the future.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wondering if that is what it's going to be. Is that they... Because I thought, like, oh, they might be an interesting sort of, like, third party in this whole conflict that's going on. But maybe they will just be, like, more... You know, because they, I mean, if you think about it, what did Deep Ground want to do in Dirge? They wanted to fucking kill the planet and make everyone, they wanted to kill everyone, but also, like, you know, spread fear and all that stuff, which kind of sounds a lot like what Sephiroth wants to do. So I'm assuming Sephiroth is going to take notice of that and be like, if I want to inflict... you know, damage or whatever on the physical plane and you know, it and maybe some other things. But I think, like, he doesn't know himself, and that's why he is, you know, maybe he doesn't even remember he's in the Northern
Crater. Because
in
Remake, we do see him say, things like, hey, this planet is my birthright. So, like, he still has those memories.
Well, are those his memories or are those Cloud's memories? Wait, hold on. Because, okay, all right, yeah. So okay, I got too caught up on the ending scene with the singularity and everything. All those, oh my god. That's why Cloud sees the flashes of Aerith's death and all these other things. Cause he's trying to how did they put it? Like, he's trying to, you know, basically he's shooting out all these memories into people, and I think he is, by doing that, maybe trying to, that's how he's trying to sow dissent and all that stuff. And hold on. Don't get ahead of yourself, Chris. Just think this out real quick. There's so much exciting stuff here. Because memories, like, I didn't really consider the memory aspect. I mean, obviously, aside from like the meme of I will never be a memory or whatever, never not be just a memory. And how much all the stuff that we've seen in remake so far, how all those flashes of the future, like, is it's starting, it's not just like a, hey, if you know, you know, sort of thing. I don't think, like, I didn't, honestly, even when I was going through the game the first time, was like, I don't think that is just what that is. I don't think that's like, hey, remember that time that Aerith died? Like, that's not, I had a feeling that it was going to be indicative of something greater than that, but I, you know, we just had nothing to go on until this. But memory seems to be like the key thing here, and that obviously, like, in order for Sephiroth to continue existing, he needs to be remembered, right? And I guess if he is remembered by Cloud, that's the most important thing, but if he can be remembered by more people, I think that makes him more powerful and will actually, you know, allow him to accomplish more, I guess. I'm still just trying to figure out, like, the A to B to C of him showing, because I now am saying or believing that he is deliberately showing these memories to these people. Or to Cloud, because we only really see his perspective most of the time. I just don't exactly... I mean, aside from just torturing Cloud, even though Cloud doesn't... But then there's that the line that Red says. Because, like, Red kind of knows, at least, or maybe can intuit that, you know, when they're like, oh, what was that? And he says, you know, this is a vision of things to come if we fail here today. So, Red is also kind of an enigma as well. Like, he also, like, I feel like we'll have some ties. I mean, fuck, man, when we get to Bugenhagen in Rebirth, that's going to be, we were already expecting that was going to be, like, a mind fuck. And, like, I think with everything that we're kind of stumbling across here, I think that's going to be even more so. I'm trying not to stumble too much on my words, but I think there's a lot of, I think I would have to, like, really think on this stuff again, before I really have, like, I would really have to, like, sit in silence and think about this for a hot minute, before I could come up with anything coherent. But there's a lot of stuff here that I am excited about. This has brought a brand new light. This has done even more than when we were doing the theory craft episodes. Jesus Christ, man. I had no expectation of this at all. When we were jumping into this episode, like, yeah, you know, we'll just read some paragraphs. It'll be fine. Oh, you know, it'll be a fun time.
Spiral.
And it's just now I miss this because, you know, a little, you know, inside baseball. It's like we haven't recorded an episode for a while. And this is, man, what a hell of a. What a hell of a thing to come back on. I don't even know what to say, honestly, at this point. There's a lot of things that I could say, but I feel like I need some more time with this. Because this, and, you know, we had said before, like, this is the first time that we're actually reading through this stuff now. So this is all stream of consciousness, as is per usual, with this show. We don't really do the whole the pre-planning thing. We have, like, a general idea sometimes, but... We end up here. I don't know. I think I'm going to shut up now and let you talk.
I mean, all in all, it's kind of wild.
Yeah.
All I ask is that everything we've read here, they touch on in the games. Like, I'm all for these sort of novels stuff on the side.
I hope they do.
This kind of stuff. Yeah, but, like, at the end of the day, you can't make this required reading. I'm all for this being like, hey, here's a sneak peek of what's coming. Hey, if you could decipher this, there's some clues. But all of this better be fleshed out,
right? Because
in the trilogy, I'd really be disappointed.
I have been,
because this is cool stuff.
I have been pretty vocal in the past about how I feel about tangential material having like really important stuff for the story, and how much I don't like that. So I mean, if this all this stuff is great, but if none of this stuff gets brought up in the games, it's going to piss me off for sure.
Yeah.
Because I, as much as I like to explore stuff outside of the games, or, you know, if it's a movie or, you know, some anything, I also, if it's something that like this, where this, the implications of these paragraphs that we just read is we may have just stumbled on like what the greater plot of the remake saga is going to be. By reading this, and I'm like, this seems kind of important to not to have in some spinoff book about, I don't even know what the book's about. Aside, is it just Aerith and Tifa going on a shopping trip? I don't even know. But
no, it explores their backstories.
Okay, all right. So yeah,
if I'm not mistaken, you're gonna learn about Tifa and her time spent training in martial arts.
Okay,
something like that.
I mean, that's worth the price of admission for me, at least. but yeah, no, I think.
Don't quote me on that. That's literally. Just
I do. Now that you said that, I feel like I do know that is like a. It was like an origin sort of thing, and it, you know, maybe we learn some more things about Aerith too, because we don't really know that much about her, to be honest. Like, we know that she's an ancient, and her mom was an ancient, and she grew up in Shinra Tower, you know, that, or for a good chunk of her life at least. But we don't really know. I mean, even here, when the pitiful few people that she knew, you know, maybe there'll be some more people that we know, and maybe they'll pop up in Rebirth. I don't know. But yeah, I'm like flustered. Yeah, I mean, this is something like, I feel like we're like, a lot of things are starting to click, you know, a lot of things that we weren't maybe so sure about. But, you know, I'm very feeling pretty good about, like, yeah, this is absolutely a sequel. I mean, it was pretty, I feel like we were already sort of heading in that direction anyway, but this more or less is confirming it for me. Again, if any of the stuff that we just read is being implemented in the story going forward, which I would think and hope that they wouldn't put some stuff like this in a prequel book, or, you know, whatever, you know, this, you know, spinoff thing. Because, you know, everything that we've seen thus far, and the reincorporation of all the compilation stuff, or at least some of it, makes me think that their strategy going forward with all this Final Fantasy VII stuff is that it is all going to lead into it, but it's not going to, hopefully it's not a thing where it's like, oh man, you better have read that book or else you're not going to understand what's going on in the game, which, I mean, I don't think that would be the case. You know, if it's as slight as, you know, reading the book will give you a little bit of extra context, I think that's fine. That would be okay. And it depends on the level of stuff that they do, you know? If it's stuff like, I hope that they do the stuff that we just read, I hope that is brought up in the main game as well. But, you know, if they kind of slightly touch upon it and, you know, like, we have the context of this, like, and just kind of is more of a supplementary thing, you know, right, and not something that you have to know in order to understand what's going on, I think that would be okay. But,
yeah,
you know, it's considering we still know absolutely nothing about Rebirth at this point, and everything just keeps... I feel like everything we ever talk about with this franchise now is just raising more questions than having any sort of answer. until we actually experience it as we're playing the game, or even then, Rebirth is not even the end of it. There's still a whole other game after that. I don't know. Like, there's so many different roads this can go down, and it's exciting, it's daunting, and it's exhausting. I am pumped. Like, I was, you know, we're recording kind of late at night here, and I was, you know, feeling a little tired before we started, but now I'm pumped. I'm ready to go. I am. And I wish there was more about this stuff to read, but that, as far as we know, that's all we have, as of right now.
We'll just have to wait until the book drops.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah, when the book drops, and, you know, maybe there's some extra stuff in there. But as far as we know right now, this is the only stuff that has been translated from the Japanese release of the book. And, I don't even know. I don't know how to end this episode. I don't know where to go from here.
Well, I mean, look, just to, I guess, put a punctuation on it. It seems as though Aerith and Sephiroth had their encounters in the time between OG and Advent Children, in the time of Advent Children and OG. It looks like there's a lot going on inside that live stream realm that we just don't know about. And I think we just both agree we'd like to see the game's
interpretation of it. Yeah. And just being like, well yeah. I want, you know. Not that I wasn't already on board before, but now I'm extra on board.
Oh, yeah.
I bought 5 seats on this bus that we're riding right now. Let's go.
All the way, baby, all the way. But, dude, that's part of what makes this journey fun, is that, like, it's going to reveal itself to us little by little. Crisis Core is around the corner. Ever Crisis probably doesn't exist anymore, but who cares? Rebirth will be here soon enough. And, dude, yeah, this is exciting stuff.
Yeah, and my voice is... I don't even have words, honestly, at this point. I mean, aside from what a fucking episode to come back on. Jesus Christ.
Hyped.
I missed this podcast, man. And I hope this was worth the wait for everyone who is listening at home. This is goddamn. And I do want to revisit this stuff at some point when we have a little bit more time to kind of marry. Yes. Absolutely. And we don't know when that's coming out. I thought it was supposed to be out this year, but maybe it might be early next year. Not quite sure, but when it does come out, you can expect at least an episode on it from us. And, I guess that's kind of it. I don't really, I don't have much else to say about this. I'm probably gonna read it to myself a couple more times before I go to sleep tonight, but goddamn, this was very enlightening stuff. I think with that, unless you have any other closing thoughts there, Nick, I think we should let these people rest their minds as well.
Let it bake in their minds. I think I'm good with that.
And if anyone...
Let it sink in.
If this information has lit your brains on fire, let us know. Like, let us know what your thoughts and opinions are. You can... You know, we're very interested to see... Like, I've been wanting to, you know, do the call to action more often. You know, because I would love to hear other people's opinions and, you know, on all this stuff. You know, as much as I love the two of us talking about it, and God knows I'm inside my own head enough, but I want to be inside your heads as well. That was a weird statement, but you know, hey, you know what I'm saying. You know what I mean. But yeah, I guess with that being said, I guess would you like to do the honors?
I would love to. Are you ready?
I am always ready.
Let's do it. 3, 2, 1.
Oh, Jesus.